The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardin. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Good evening, my friends. Thank you for tuning in. Show about money. And be nice to have a little more money, wouldn't it? Well, turn up your radio and get comfortable. We're going to help you certainly protect some of that money. And we're going to forewarn you, U.S. estate tax. Interesting phenomena. It's a very, very interesting phenomena. Certainly as wealth has increased, some people have become extremely wealthy, be it in crypto, some ventures. The last 10 years have been an opportunity, certainly, to make a lot of money. And incredible, some people have tipped themselves into a point where they perhaps could be subjected to something we don't have here in Canada. In the United States, it's called U.S. estate tax, where the U.S. government taxes the value of your estate at death. We don't have that in Canada. In Canada, we have probate, and that is nothing more than a stamp from the court verifying the validity of a will. And we Canadians go through great lengths to avoid probate. And often there's bigger enemy abroad that you have to be paying attention to. So again, I want to just help you be aware that this U.S. estate tax does exist. And perhaps if you are inheriting a farm, have yourself a big amount of wealth, you want to pay attention to what I'm talking about because it certainly can protect you. Had to lean over to the experts, Jason Ubica, excuse me. He's with BDO, personal tax leader in Canada. Joined the companies in 1993, and since 2003, he's specialized in Canada-U.S. Border taxation. It's a very, very important discussion. And again, it gets as small as owning a property in Florida to becoming one of the 1% that now subjects yourself to U.S. estate tax. So if I may just help set the table, Jason, I want to thank you for joining us because this has been coming up with some of our clients who are hitting the threshold of having a net worth of $25 million U.S., at which point you could be subject to U.S. estate tax if you own U.S. assets. U.S. assets can be anything from common stock, i.e. Microsoft, Google, Apple, to some real estate, to U.S. government bonds, treasuries, in other words. So, Jason, I want you to please explain to us in layman's terms how this U.S. estate tax works, when we are truly subjected to it, and to what degree of our U.S. or of our estate would be subject to the tax, and how punitive is the tax?
Sure. Thanks, Wolfgang, and thanks for having me on the show. Happy to chat about this with you today. U.S. estate tax, it's quite a maze to navigate here. You mentioned earlier that it could apply to people who have a worldwide net worth of something north of 25 million U.S. Well, it could be less than that. I would say that would roughly be your threshold if you're a married couple and looking at yourself collectively with your spouse. But if you're someone who's unmarried, the current U.S. estate tax exemption is actually just a hair over $12 million U.S. So if your worldwide assets are more than that threshold and you pass away and you own some U.S. situs assets, which, as you've mentioned, could include U.S. stocks, certain U.S. debt obligations, U.S. real estate as well, if you're over that worldwide net worth exemption, then yes, you could face, or your estate could face, a liability upon your death. How much tax might be owing is really highly driven by how much your worldwide net worth is in excess of that threshold. Again, if you're below that threshold, at the end of the day, you pay no tax. If you have more than 60,000 of U.S. assets, you do have to file, or your estate has to file, an estate tax return, but at the end of the day, the tax would end up being zero. If you're over that threshold, depending on how much over you are, that's going to drive your tax liability. The way I like to look at it, Wolfgang, would be To what degree are you above the exemption? Let's say, to make the number simple, the exemption at the current time is $10 million instead of $12 million. And let's say that someone's worldwide net worth is $30 million and they don't have a surviving spouse if they were to pass away. Well, the exemption is representing one-third of their worldwide net worth. So if they had, let's say, $1 million worth of U.S. CITES assets, one-third of the value of those assets would be shielded from estate tax. The other two-thirds would be subject to the tax. And how much is the tax? Well, the tax could be as much as 40%. That's the top estate tax rate. And someone whose net worth is in the stratosphere where you're actually paying estate tax, you'd find that you're paying an average tax rate somewhere approaching that top rate of 40%. So in my example here, you take your $1 million, two-thirds of it subject to tax at a rate of up to 40%, and you're looking at potentially several hundred thousand dollars worth of U.S. estate tax. And that's really the nut that we have to crack and what we need to plan proactively against.
Jason, A+, you're a fantastic teacher. That is very, very clean flowing. So it is only the portion of U.S. assets that becomes subjected to the U.S. estate tax first and foremost. So my cottage in Muskoka is not subjected to U.S. estate tax. However, my place in the Hamptons would be subjected to U.S. estate tax. By the way, friends, I have neither piece of real estate. I'm speaking fictitiously. But again, so how do we protect ourselves? And this is, again, important, friends at home. There is a quick trick you can do to avoid U.S. estate tax. If you own stock, publicly traded stock, and you are aware that you're coming to your final days in life, or your executor is aware, if they have power of attorney over your estate, this is important. If you have power of attorney over someone's estate, you should be aware in advance of what their estate consists of, what assets, liabilities, debt holders, et cetera, is this person subjected to, so you can make informed decisions in advance of rather than after the fact, when usually you can't fix certain lack of transactions that have gone down. So the point is, if you own common stock and you're on your final days of life, if you sell that stock before death, you exonerate yourself from exposure. Correct, Jason?
That's absolutely correct. Now, sometimes, of course, that's easier said than done. Sometimes someone will pass away suddenly. Let's say it's, heaven forbid, a car accident.
Correct.
There isn't time to put in that call to the broker to liquidate that U.S. position.
Right. And sorry, if I may interrupt, Jason, the settlement does matter, which means I assume it's settlement, not trade date. Now, again, I say that, friends at home, if you sell a stock today, it takes 48 hours for it to, quote unquote, settle or clear, which means, you have to do this 48 hours in advance of you. Of course, have to do it only when the market is open for business. But you do have time. And I share that with you because if you own a condominium or a house in perhaps Florida, a little more difficult to sell quickly. Furthermore, quality large cap blue chip equities are easier to sell than speculative crap, I shall say. So keep those points in mind. Jason, again, how else can we protect ourselves? But again, let's talk perhaps about the use of corporations. I'm uber wealthy. I have a mansion and a yacht. And those assets are, the mansion is in the United States. The yacht is internationally registered in Malta. That's where apparently a lot of ships are being registered. Very, very low tax jurisdiction. Tax tip for you, my friends. If you own a ship, register it in Malta. Apparently, that's the way to do it. You can use an EU passport quite easily. Interesting little setup they have over there. I learned that in my travels, and that's why I always encourage people to travel. I digress. Jason, the use of a corporation. How can we use that to protect ourselves if we own a lot of assets and we are subjected above that $12 million threshold? That's a good point you made. It's $12 million U.S. per person, approximately $24-25 million per couple. So that point matters a whole lot as well. Thank you for clarifying that. Use of a corp, help me out.
Sure. Sure. Using a Canadian holding company is a reasonably straightforward method to give one estate tax protection. And that's because for the purposes of the U.S. estate tax rules, the U.S. generally doesn't look through a foreign corporation like a Canadian corporation to see what sort of assets are inside. It's a bit of a black box approach here. So whether your U.S. situs assets consist of blue chip U.S. stocks, U.S. real estate, or anything else that falls under that umbrella of U.S. situs assets, if you own it inside a Canadian corporation, that does give you quite solid estate tax shielding. To get those properties into the company, if they've already appreciated in value, it is typically possible to do that on a tax-deferred basis in Canada, you'd have to be cognizant as to whether there could be any U.S. tax implications of that transfer, more so for real estate than it would be for other types of U.S. assets. But that's absolutely a viable planning opportunity, and we do see a lot of high-net-worth individuals decide to hold the U.S. portion of their portfolios through a Canadian corporation.
But again, it is not black and white. When you own securities inside a Canadian holdco, that becomes passive investments. And they are a little more onerously taxed on the front end.
Yes, you'd have to be mindful of what the Canadian tax consequences are as well. Holding such investments through a Canadian corporation may not be optimally efficient from a Canadian tax perspective if you're looking at minimizing your overall income tax burden. So like many other tax planning ideas, there's a bit of give and take here. You've got advantages and disadvantages of any particular planning opportunity you might take advantage of.
Friends at home, I think you're connecting the dots. The world is complicated. You need partners, people in your corner. Jack Hartle, Wolfgang Klein, right here, Jason Yubica, all friends of yours. We're here to help develop relationships with people like us for the long haul. It will save you money and hopefully help you compound wealth. Going to take a quick break, take a breath of fresh air, get right back to the show about money. It's Hi-Fi Radio, 640 Toronto.
Let's take a break. Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Welcome back, my friends. The irony is, if you're born in Canada and you've made it big, you could be subjected to U.S. estate tax. Very punitive. A few nasty shitholes, shall I say, in the way the game is set up. I share with you, you are successful. You decide to buy yourself a wonderful place in the state of Florida. You spend $3 million on it, U.S., you're worth, and you're single, and you're worth, say, $25 million. But your only asset in the United States is that piece of property. You pay $3 million for it. You pass away, it is fully subject to that tax that Jason was speaking about. It doesn't matter what you paid for it. The day you purchase it, it becomes subject to U.S. tax. So you convert your Canadian dollars to U.S., and at that point in time when you buy that asset, fully subjected to tax, it could be as high as 40% on the price of that asset. But again, it depends on the portion. There's a formula as indicated by Jason. And Jason, the formula that you shared with us, the one third, it was a $30 million individual, $10 million was sheltered, therefore one third was sheltered, and then you had $1 million. One third of the million became sheltered, two thirds subjected to the tax of the million. So here it'd be two thirds, basically, for the same math, it would be two thirds of a $3 million asset, 40%. That'd be over $1 million in tax, rough math. So if this individual had a $30 million net worth, just bought themselves a place in Florida for $3 million. At that point in time, they'd be subjected to $1 million in tax if they died at that point in time. If they held inside a corporation, you said they could avoid that burden, correct?
That's right. A corporation is one vehicle that could provide you state tax shielding. There are other means as well besides a corporation. So often we see people use a family trust. Perhaps they use a partnership structure. If those structures, which are a bit more complex to set up or set up properly, it can give you a comparable level of estate tax protection. So there's often a few different ways to skin a cat, so to speak. And the corporation is a good model for some individuals to use, but for others, perhaps a trust or a partnership. There's various advantages and disadvantages of any particular method of owning U.S. real estate. There's no one way to hold U.S. real estate that I would say is universally best. So it's a matter of looking at those advantages and disadvantages and as an individual deciding which ones are important to you.
Jack, you had a question on real estate.
Yeah, that was really the one, the fact that when you buy real estate, you're going to be fully exposed immediately. And is that correct, Jason? There's no timeline or there's no capital gains you have to focus on. It's more just the purchase price of the real estate and the date that you die?
That's generally correct. It's really the value of the property on death that's relevant. So it's without any reference to a concept of a gain or appreciation. It could be a property that you purchase for $3 million and let's say it's gone down in value to $2.5 million. Well, you still have estate tax exposure. It's just based on a $2.5 million value instead of the original cost.
Wow. It really shows you the fact that you need to set these up correctly at the beginning, whether it's a trust, personal, or corp. Just because of the fact that, you know, marketable securities, as Wolfgang alluded to, are easy to liquidate a couple of days before death, assuming that you know the day you're going to die. But selling a less liquid piece of real estate is very challenging. So you want to make sure that when you're buying real estate, you know, you speak with a professional so that you get the proper structure set up beforehand. The other point that I'd make, Wolfgang, and we talk about blue chip stocks, and we like that for our clients, getting that global exposure of, you know, Apple or Amazon or Google, whatever the case. Maybe, Jason, you could speak to some of the other liquid structures that are available for investors to focus on, whether it being, you know, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds. Because from my understanding, you can still get the same exposure to the U.S. market, but avoid that U.S. estate tax without actually having to sell or liquidate the investments before you die.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's often an easier path than setting up your own Canadian holding company to own a direct interest in these U.S. stocks. Instead, you could get into the U.S. market investing in Canadian mutual funds, Canadian exchange-traded funds. They may be loaded with U.S. investments, but broadly speaking, the U.S. is not going to look through the mutual fund or the ETF to see what the underlying securities are. They again take a bit of a black box approach. Most typically, a mutual fund or exchange-traded fund will be treated as a corporation for U.S. tax purposes. Therefore, it's providing the same sort of shielding that your own personal holding company might. You get exposure to the markets without having to deal with the estate tax consequences.
Jason, the tax legislation around foreigners paying U.S. estate tax is a moving target. Can you please speak to that? And there's an end date to the current setup. I think it's 2026, when if new legislation isn't passed, it goes back to the previous thresholds, which are significantly lower. And the point I'm going to make to all of this is this requires professionals working with you ongoing to help you be aware in advance of such very, very critical, perhaps, changes to factors that can adversely affect your well-being.
That's absolutely right. The U.S. estate tax exemption is a bit of a moving target, and it has been quite volatile in recent years. The good news for taxpayers is that it's been on the uptrend consistently since 2001. 2001, we had an exemption of only $675,000, And gradually over the years, that has increased, and we're now just a hair over $12 million. You're absolutely right that there's a what they call a sunset clause in the current legislation. That means absent any other legislative activity, that exemption will drop to half of its current amount starting in 2026. So ignoring indexing for inflation, that $12 million exemption is scheduled to decrease to roughly $6 million in 2026. Now, a lot could happen between now and 2026. The current exemption could be made permanent. They might accelerate the decrease in that exemption. It's really up to Congress and what they're able to pass. The Democrats have historically favored exemptions on the lower side. Republicans have historically favored exemptions on the higher side. And it's really Republican forces that, by and large, have driven the exemption where it is today. But one should be careful to just discount estate tax because, hey, my net worth is substantially below $12 million U.S., so I don't need to worry about it. Well, maybe not at this moment, but you might find that either your net worth increases significantly or the exemption decreases significantly, and overnight you might go from no exposure to estate tax liabilities if you were to die to having significant exposure.
You know, it's remarkable, Jason. Again, if you're just tuning in, we're talking cross-border tax. We're talking U.S. estate tax. We're talking tax, of course, ongoing to help you be aware of it. But it's remarkable. I phoned a number of our clients who are exposed to those thresholds. In other words, who are very wealthy and they have well over the threshold. And I said, are you aware of U.S. estate tax? And they say no. And I said, well, this is your type of potential exposure. And they couldn't believe it. They were astounded. So, of course, meetings are being set to help them, brush up on the legislation so that they can do some planning perhaps around it. Again, Jack, you made such a clean, valid point. If you're looking to purchase U.S. assets of any sort, be aware in advance of potential risks to your net worth. And again, you have to pre-plan setting up a corporation. There's no point buying an asset, having it appreciate over 25 years, then trying to protect it from U.S. estate tax. It can be much more onerous and could cost you a lot of money, i.e. tripping a capital gain that was not necessarily required had you planned properly in advance. That's a very, very valid point. I'll tell you something else, Jack and Jason and friends at home. My sweet mother passed away 5 or 6 years ago. Recently, through her employment, was a member of an insurance company called Economical. They recently demutualized, and my mother received a check in the mail. The check was for $2,800. And my beneficiaries or my siblings, oh, we got ourselves a few $300. So like Monopoly, right? You win yourself a couple $100. So, well, slow down. I have to file a tax return. I filed the tax return, and my accountant processed that quite quickly. That cost me $300 to file the tax return against a $2,800 check. The tax liability on the $2,800, Jason, you know the number. It was $1,100. It was 40%. It was one line item. The income was $2,800 for the year. But because it's a trust, I guess, and Jason, you can speak to what the legislation now is on that, but the government doesn't want money sitting in trust. And if it does sit in a trust, it's the first dollar is taxed at the top marginal rate. So, Jason, we received $2,800. The beneficiaries are going to get well less than half of it.
It really highly depends on the circumstances. You do often see scenarios where default withholding tax, which is most typically 30%, is withheld at source. Sometimes that's the
correct amount. Still a tax paid.
Yeah, it's still a tax paid. In some cases there are means by which one could reduce that tax. Often the default tax rate is not the final or ultimate determination of tax. In certain circumstances, one might need to file a U.S. tax return to get the tax down. In some cases, it may just be a advanced communication with the the administrator of the funds in the U.S. to make sure that they're withholding taxes at the correct rate.
Jason Ubica, accountant at BDO, one of our partners, I shall say, and the team at the Wolf on Bay Street, these types of questions matter. The world is complicated. Friends, you need good partners. And that's what Jack and I are here to do, be your partners in helping you protect your wealth and build your wealth. Jason, that was brilliant. I can't thank you enough. Good job, my friend. You have yourself a safe weekend, a great weekend. Jack, we are going to have a fabulous conversation with Jamie Carrasco. We're going to talk crypto. We're going to talk gold. We're going to have some fun with this man. Hope he's not crying too much into his soup. Hi-Fi Radio, going to take a quick break. Get right back to the show about money with Jack Hartland. We'll be Klein. Friends, stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Did she make you cry? Make you break down? Shatter your illusions of love? And is it over now? Do you know how? Pick up the pieces and go home.
Amazing lick. Love the lick. I'm talking about if you play guitar. Oh, great music. Just love it. Little Gold Dust Woman. Jamie Carrasco, friend of ours. The office of the Canaccord down on Bay Street. Indeed, we are fully operational. Doors open. COVID's dead. But we still have to be aware and still have to be vigilant. And it's remarkable. You know, a lot of us continue to wear masks, and God bless you. And but it's good to see the world normalize. Remarkable. They shut the economy down. They jam some money into the system. Market goes up. COVID comes along, and well, if you're an investor, COVID was okay to you. For the most part, if you're an investor, you're in the right stuff. You made some good money in COVID. Commodities, of course, coming in on the tail end of that. And well, gold, not bad. Flirting with $2,000. You know, Jack and I, we're long a few gold positions, 2 or 3%, I think, of our portfolio. But there's a gold bug in them hills. His name is Jamie Carrasco, alternative asset thinker. Not a conspiracy theorist, but certainly aware of the amount of money that's been printed globally for decades upon decades. And, well, historically speaking, when you print too much money, it doesn't end well. You know, Kathy, my beautiful bride, has always said America is a nation in decline. And perhaps she's right. The question is, in my lifetime or our children's lifetime, I don't know. I digress. Jamie, my friend, welcome back to IFR Radio. You have crypto on your books. You got a fair bit of gold on your books. How are you holding in, man? It's been a tough year.
Holding in well because of how I position gold. It's insurance. And, you know, you don't trade your insurance. You hold it, have a percentage, an allocation, and you just keep rebalancing that allocation. On periods like this, we rebalance. If it goes up, you cut back. If it goes down, you buy back. Asset allocation is key when gold. But I do think inflation is starting to trick up. And some people might say that central banks have lost control of inflation, like Latin American central banks. And that's where gold really helps. And globally, we're seeing a massive power shift occurring. You know, there's a lot of things in fluctuation, similar to the 70s and 80s. Commodities up, everything's playing out except the price of gold. So the real question is, does it catch up to commodities? Because since 2020, the CRB, and gold is the second biggest component, is up 235%, and gold is down 14%. That anomaly has never happened. So either the CRB has to come down, commodities have to come down, or gold has to catch up. I think it's going to resolve in the other way. So that's why I like my insurance, and I'm happy to hold on to it.
You know, the just going through my mind was, I think I've heard of 3 or 4 instances of catalytic converters being stolen from parked vehicles. Is it platinum or palladium inside a catalytic converter,
palladium,
or is it interchangeable? It's palladium. And what is the price of palladium? I'm going to say $4,000 an ounce.
I think it's up there. Yeah. Again, it's one of the commodities that has gone up because a lot of them comes from Russia. And the bigger question, actually, when we talk about Russia, is this whole globalist system. Is the globalist system coming to an end, which is going to be highly inflationary for us, right? So I think there's a lot of things in flux right now that are going to cause a lot more inflation. And that's the catalyst for gold. Why, you know, gold is holding on quite well. It's the producers are in down. And by the way, I just own producers because production, if the cost is low, they're making money. And at some point, though, that productivity is going to be even better as gold starts to move up.
Right? So you like the producers over the commodity itself?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because I think reserves on the ground are going to be the key. You know, go back to 2011, last time we were at 2000. Reserves on the ground were at $300 an ounce, $350 at the height. They're trading around $60 an ounce. So a company like Agnico Eagle, right? I think at some point we're going to have a mad rush for gold. Central banks have been buying for the last 5 years at a crazy amount. So it doesn't make sense that the price isn't going up. Central banks have accumulated more gold than they have since we unpegged in 75. That is a fact. But the price hasn't moved yet. So that anomaly to me is quite interesting. And I think at some point something has to revert. Central banks are going to be holding on to their gold. People are going to be looking to scramble to get some. And I think the reserves on the ground are going to show value, right? Every time we go through this inflationary madness, that once investors wake up to it. You know, it's sad. One thing I have to point out, the percentage of gold, I'm glad that you guys, you know, you're adding, but investors as a whole have a very anemic position in gold. And I find that historically gold has been the best hedge for inflation. So if we're going to have a massive inflationary storm, they own least the asset they're going to need most. And I think that to me is a beautiful thing because I like buying assets when they're cheap and nobody owns them.
Well, the same thing is, Jack is an economist by studies, I shall say. So, Jack, please give us your economic read on inflation. Is it permanent? Is it temporary? What's the new world order from an inflationary perspective based on your read, Jack?
Well, as you said, the central banks have printed a ton of money since COVID. That's obvious. And people are feeling inflation right now. It's real. You feel it at the pumps. You feel it at the grocery stores. All those everyday items. It's real, and it has been going higher. The question that I would have for Jamie is, gold does well in an inflationary environment, and you mentioned the fact that central banks, people are starting to lose faith in central banks. But from my perspective, what I am seeing out there is inflation is in the headline news right now. But the fact is, from our perspective, it's starting to slow down and it's starting to decelerate. So central banks are reducing the accommodation that they put out because of COVID. They're slowing down the economy. They're trying to reduce demand. And because of that, inflation appears, I will emphasize there, to be peaking. And if that's the case, that's actually quite positive for risk assets, whether it's, you know, stocks, real estate, even bonds, because central banks may not have to raise rates as much as everyone expects. And that would actually be I'm not going to say a Goldilocks scenario for stocks, but potentially a soft landing that people are hoping and looking for. So what's your view on that in the, I'm going to say, short to medium term inflation decelerating from peak levels?
You got about 60 seconds for this, Jamie.
You just made a great point that inflation appears to be under check, but don't forget that in the last CPI number, they changed the way they calculated inflation again by changing used cars. So that's a temporary dip. I would argue that once that dip filters through, we're going to see more upside going forward. Let's not forget about hedonic adjustments that they keep doing to put things under check, because the way they calculate inflation today is not the way they were calculating it in the 80s. And they're doing it so that we don't fully understand the hit of inflation. To me, inflation is that money is devaluing, not that things are going up in price. So the question is money going to continue devaluing? And I think it will, because as the economy slows down, now we're talking about a recession. Are they going to be able to continue raising rates? We're only at 1%, inflation's at 8%, and inflation's an exponential event. So is it going to continue to increase? I would say yes, considering everything that's going on around the world. If that's the case, I think at some point people have to take that into account and start protecting themselves, which is, you know, I've been going on about inflation since 2015. The real question is, have central banks lost control of inflation? With Fed rate at, 1% and inflation at 8%, that's a 7% gap. They have to raise, what did Kenneth Rogoff come out? He said that 2 weeks ago they have to raise to at least 5% to put it under check. Well, we're 4% away from that. So You know, I think inflation will continue to build.
We're talking about inflation. We're talking money, of course. The show is Hi-Fi Radio. Jack Hartle, portfolio manager. Myself, Wolfgang Klein, portfolio manager. And we're on with our friend in the office, I shall say, Jamie Carrasco, also portfolio manager. It's always a treat to spend some time with Jamie. I get a real kick out of his mind and the way he thinks. More show, my good friends, right after this.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Have I told you about my trip to Italy, my friend? Oh, don't ask. It was such a beautiful trip. I won't stop. But we're talking about inflation. And coming back from my wonderful voyage to Italy for 2 weeks, I could not believe the comparison in food prices from Italy to Toronto. How so? Number one, I would say half price for most of the food I ate in Italy than I had in Toronto. A panini with beautiful salami and cheese. €3, maybe €4. Let's say €4, which is $6. Down the food court at Michael's, $12. Cappuccino downtown Toronto, $5. Cappuccino in Italy, €1.50, which is $2 Canadian. Where's the food better? Hey, come on. You know where it's better. Way better. So you get better food for half the price. So if you're worried about food inflation, Mambo Italiano, go to Italy. And you can do some clothes shopping as well. Leather garments, belts, $10. 10 euros, excuse me. 10 euros for a belt, 50 euro for a fine pair of shoes, $12. 12 euro, 10 euro for 100% beautiful cotton t-shirts. It's unbelievable. But there's inflation here, lots of it. So we're talking about 8% inflation, Jack and Jamie. 8% is a number not seen, I think, but in 40 years, something to that effect. The question I think the market is saying is it's not going to stay at 8%, Jamie. The market, with a 10-year bond flirting with, what, 3.25, and actually pulling back from that level. If I were to call the bond market, I would say the 10-year top in yield in the interim is in. Maybe another quarter point higher, 3.5. So then lower rates, Jack. You showed this to me, the dot plot. Lower rates actually hitting the market perhaps late next year, and on their way down below 3% again. So that's what the market's telling me is going to take place, Jamie. Not continued 8% inflation.
Let me address it as an ex bond trader, as an ex repo trader, and let's not forget that the repo window is $2 trillion every night now. The 10-year bond started moving higher at the same time as the CRB did in 2020. The CRB has paused but not declined. 10-year bonds are at 277 today. They got down to 269, so they're starting to creep up again. The 30-year bond just crossed 3% again. So I think that here we can wait and see what happens. Because if the 30-year bond continues tracking higher, and my bet, my speculation, is that the bond market is not listening to the Fed anymore, and it has begun pricing in inflation. If it has a 3% or 277 10-year bond, is going to continue moving. At some point, the bond vigilantes are going to wake up, and that's what happened in the 80s. They stopped listening to the Fed, and they started pricing in inflation. And the Fed could not control that. So are the bond vigilantes, it's Jeremy Grantham, all the big bond managers, loud enough now that people are listening to them and the bond market going higher? I think here's, I agree, the bond market is kind of waffling right now. Where's it going to go? We will know as the next economic numbers come out. Right?
I would say the one thing that I see with the bond market, and no one, listeners don't like talking about bonds because it's boring. But when you look at it, it's your mortgage. So in the United States, the 30-year mortgage is now 5.5%. In Canada, the five-year fixed is 4%. So it actually does matter to listeners what interest rates are at. And what I'm seeing out there, Wolf and Jamie, is with rising interest rates, you're seeing exactly what you would expect. You're seeing risk assets coming off, meaning prices are coming down, and the economy is slowing. Slowing demand for housing, slowing demand for durable goods, slowing demand for everyday products because people have less money because of, one, inflation, but also because of higher interest rates. So I think for the time being, what Wolfgang is talking about is true. You're going to see the 5, 10, and 30-year not get unpegged, and the bond vigilantes are going to run away with it this time. At some point in the future, well down the future, as Kathleen says, maybe U.S. is in decline. But I think, you know, rising rates, the Fed still has control, and we're seeing a slowing economy, which is exactly what they want.
Do you see a recession, gentlemen?
Well, there's definitely talk now. A lot of people are saying that by year end we will. The economic numbers, you know, I think right now they're neutral, right? Are we going to go any further economic? We'll have to wait and see what happens through the summer, right? But inflation is definitely kicking in. The housing market, we're starting to see a slowdown. So will there be? I would be betting yes, I guess. You know, again, I'm a bottle half empty kind of guy when it comes to this in terms of having insurance.
My answer to that, Wolf, is I think it's too early to call a recession, both in Canada and the U.S. But when it does come, I think it will affect Canadians worse just because Canadian consumers are much more indebted than the Americans are. They sort of cleaned up their balance sheets back in 2008, 2009. But if there was a recession, I would expect it to be second half of next year to the back end of next year, just because of the amount of pent-up demand and growth that's already embedded in the system right now.
Well, my friends, recession is making headlines, but we're not in a recession, so don't think recessionary thought. And the world is half full, not half empty. It just is. Fill your glass up, my good friends, with joy, with peace, with love. We're here to help you out, so you know we can make things right for you if you need your hand, need some help, as Jack and I are here for. Jamie, of course, always a pleasure to speak gold with you and inflation with you and the monetary system with you. It matters. Have a good weekend, my friends. High Five Radio, each and every Saturday on 640 in Toronto. Jack Hartle, Wolfgang Klein. Any questions for us? WolfgangKlein.com. Stay safe. God bless.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week. The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.